Dune by Frank Herbert, continued. Paul deactivated his shield, leaned on the table to catch his breath.
I deserved that, Gurney, but it would have angered my father if you'd hurt me. I'll not have you punished for my failing.
As to that, Halleck said, it was my failing too, and you needn't worry about a training scar or two. You're lucky you have so few. As to your father, the Duke could punish me only if I failed to make a first-class fighting man out of you. And I'd have been failing there if I hadn't explained the fallacy in this mood thing you've suddenly developed.
Paul straightened, slipped his bodkin back into its wrist sheath.
It's not exactly play we do here, Halleck said.
Paul nodded. He felt a sense of wonder at the uncharacteristic seriousness in Halleck's manner, the sobering intensity. He looked at the beet-colored, ink-fine scar on the man's jaw, remembering the story of how it had been put there by Beast Raban in a Harkonnen slave pit on Gedi Prime. And Paul felt a sudden shame that he had doubted Halleck even for an instant. It occurred to Paul, then, that the making of Halleck's scar had been accompanied by pain, a pain as intense, perhaps, as that inflicted by a reverend mother. He thrust this thought aside. It chilled their world.
"I guess I did hope for some play today," Paul said. "Things are so serious around here lately."
Halleck turned away to hide his emotions. Something burned in his eyes. There was pain in him, like a blister, all that was left of some lost yesterday that time had pruned off him.
"How soon this child must assume his manhood," Halleck thought. "How soon he must read that form within his mind, that contract of brutal caution, to enter the necessary fact on the necessary line? Please list your next of kin."
Halleck spoke without turning.
"I sense the play in you, lad, and I'd like nothing better than to join in it. But this no longer can be play. Tomorrow we go to Arrakis. Arrakis is real. The Harkonnens are real."
Paul touched his forehead with his rapier blade held vertical. Halleck turned, saw the salute, and acknowledged it with a nod. He gestured to the practice dummy.
"Now we'll work on your timing. Let me see you catch that thing sinister. I'll control it from over here, where I can have a full view of the action. And I warn you, I'll be trying new counters today. There's a warning you'd not get from a real enemy."
Paul stretched up on his toes to relieve his muscles. He felt solemn with the sudden realization that his life had become filled with swift changes. He crossed to the dummy, slapped the switch on its chest with his rapier tip, and felt the defensive field forcing his blade away.
"En garde!" Halleck called,
and the dummy pressed the attack. Paul activated his shield, parried and countered. Halleck watched as he manipulated the controls. His mind seemed to be in two parts, one alert to the needs of the training fight, and the other wandering in fly-buzz.
"I'm the well-trained fruit tree," he thought, "full of well-trained feelings and abilities, and all of them grafted onto me, all bearing for someone else to pick."
For some reason, he recalled his younger sister, her elfin face so clear in his mind. But she was dead now, in a pleasure house for Harkonnen troops. She had loved pansies, or was it daisies? He couldn't remember. It bothered him that he couldn't remember. Paul countered a slow swing of the dummy, brought up his left hand entre tisse.
"That clever little devil," Halleck thought,
intent now on Paul's interweaving hand motions.
"He's been practicing and studying on his own. That's not Duncan's style, and it's certainly nothing I've taught him."
This thought only added to Halleck's sadness.
"I'm infected by mood," he thought,
and he began to wonder about Paul, if the boy ever listened fearfully to his pillow throbbing in the night.
"If wishes were fishes, we'd all cast nets," he murmured.
It was his mother's expression, and he always used it when he felt the blackness of tomorrow on him. Then he thought what an odd expression that was to be taken to a planet that had never known seas or fishes.
Yui. U.E. Wellington. Wellington. Standard 10,082 through 10,191. Medical doctor of the Sook School. Grad standard 10,112. Married. Juana Marcus, B.G. Standard 10,092 through 10,186. Chiefly noted as betrayer of Duke Leto Atreides. C.F. Bibliography. Appendix 7, Imperial Conditioning, and Betrayal, the. From Dictionary of Muad'Dib,
by the Princess Irulan. Although he heard Dr. Yui enter the training room, noting the stiff deliberation of the man's pace, Paul remained stretched out face down on the exercise table where the masseuse had left him. He felt deliciously relaxed after the workout with Gurney Halleck.
"You do look comfortable," said Yui in his calm, high-pitched voice.
Paul raised his head, saw the man's stick figure standing several paces away, took in at a glance the wrinkled black clothing, the square block of a head with purple lips and drooping mustache, the diamond tattoo of imperial conditioning on his forehead, the long black hair caught in the Sook School's silver ring at the left shoulder.
"You'll be happy to hear we haven't time for regular lessons today," Yui said. "Your father will be along presently."
Paul sat up.
"However, I've arranged for you to have a film book viewer and several lessons during the crossing to Arrakis."
"Oh." Paul began pulling on his clothes. He felt excitement that his father would be coming. They had spent so little time together since the Emperor's command to take over the fief of Arrakis. Yui crossed to the L table, thinking, "How the boy has filled out these past few months! Such a waste! Oh, such a sad waste!"
And he reminded himself, "I must not falter. What I do was done to be certain my Wana no longer can be hurt by the Harkonnen beasts."
Paul joined him at the table, buttoning his jacket.
"What'll I be studying on the way across?" "Ah, the tyrannic life forms of Arrakis. The planet seems to have opened its arms to certain tyrannic life forms. It's not clear how. I must seek out the planetary ecologist when we arrive, a Dr. Kynes, and offer my help in the investigation."
And Yui thought, "What am I saying? I play the hypocrite even with myself."
"Will there be something on the Fremen?" Paul asked. "The Fremen?"
Yui drummed his fingers on the table, caught Paul staring at the nervous motion, withdrew his hand.
"Maybe you have something on the whole Arrakeen population," Paul said. "Yes, to be sure," Yui said. "There are two general separations of the people. Fremen, they are one group, and the others are the people of the Graben, the Sink, and the Pan. There's some intermarriage, I'm told. The women of Pan and Sink villages prefer Fremen husbands. Their men prefer Fremen wives. They have a saying, 'Polish comes from the cities, wisdom from the desert.'"
"Do you have pictures of them?"
"I'll see what I can get you. The most interesting feature, of course, is their eyes. Totally blue, no whites in them."
"Mutation?"
"No, it's linked to saturation of the blood with melange."
"The Fremen must be brave to live at the edge of that desert."
"By all accounts," Yui said, "they compose poems to their knives. Their women are as fierce as the men. Even Fremen children are violent and dangerous. You'll not be permitted to mingle with them, I dare say."
Paul stared at Yui, finding in these few glimpses of the Fremen a power of words that caught his entire attention.
"What a people to win as allies!"
"And the worms?" Paul asked.
"What?"
"I'd like to study more about the sandworms."
"Ah, to be sure. I've a film book on a small specimen, only 110 meters long and 22 meters in diameter. It was taken in the northern latitudes. Worms of more than 400 meters in length have been recorded by reliable witnesses, and there's reason to believe even larger ones exist."
Paul glanced down at a conical projection chart of the northern Arrakeen latitudes spread on the table.
"The desert belt and south polar regions are marked uninhabitable. Is it the worms?" "And the storms."
"But any place can be made habitable."
"If it's economically feasible," Yui said. "Arrakis has many costly perils."
He smoothed his drooping mustache.
"Your father will be here soon. Before I go, I've a gift for you, something I came across in packing."
He put an object on the table between them, black, oblong, no larger than the end of Paul's thumb. Paul looked at it. Yui noted how the boy did not reach for it and thought,
"How cautious he is." "It's a very old orange Catholic Bible made for space travelers. Not a film book, but actually printed on filament paper. It has its own magnifier and electrostatic charge system."
He picked it up, demonstrated.
"The book is held closed by the charge, which forces against spring-locked covers. You press the edge, thus, and the pages you've selected repel each other and the book opens."
"It's so small."
"But it has 1,800 pages.
You press the edge, thus, and so, and the charge moves ahead one page at a time as you read. Never touch the actual pages with your fingers. The filament tissue is too delicate.
He closed the book, handed it to Paul.
Try it.
Yui watched Paul work the page adjustment, thought,
I salve my own conscience. I give him the surcease of religion before betraying him. Thus may I say to myself that he has gone where I cannot go.
This must have been made before film books, Paul said.
It's quite old. Let it be our secret, eh? Your parents might think it too valuable for one so young.
And Yui thought, his mother would surely wonder at my motives.
Well,
Paul closed the book, held it in his hand.
If it's so valuable...
Indulge an old man's whim, Yui said. It was given to me when I was very young.
And he thought,
I must catch his mind as well as his cupidity. Open it to 467 Kalama, where it says, From water does all life begin. There's a slight notch on the edge of the cover to mark the place.
Paul felt the cover, detected two notches, one shallower than the other. He pressed the shallower one, and the book spread open on his palm, its magnifier sliding into place.
Read it aloud, Yui said.
Paul wet his lips with his tongue, read,
Think you of the fact that a deaf person cannot hear? Then what deafness may we not all possess? What senses do we lack that we cannot see and cannot hear another world all around us? What is there around us that we cannot...
Stop it! Yui barked. Paul broke off, stared at him. Yui closed his eyes, fought to regain composure.
What perversity caused the book to open at my Wana's favorite passage?
He opened his eyes, saw Paul staring at him.
Is something wrong? Paul asked. I'm sorry, Yui said. That was my dead wife's favorite passage. It's not the one I intended you to read. It brings up memories that are painful.
There are two notches, Paul said.
Of course, Yui thought. Wana marked her passage. His fingers are more sensitive than mine and found her mark. It was an accident, no more. You may find the book interesting, Yui said. It has much historical truth in it, as well as good ethical philosophy.
Paul looked down at the tiny book in his palm. Such a small thing. Yet it contained a mystery. Something had happened while he read from it. He had felt something stir his terrible purpose.
Your father will be here any minute, Yui said. Put the book away and read it at your leisure.
Paul touched the edge of it as Yui had shown him. The book sealed itself. He slipped it into his tunic. For a moment there, when Yui had barked at him, Paul had feared the man would demand the book's return.
I thank you for the gift, Dr. Yui, Paul said, speaking formally. It will be our secret. If there is a gift of favor you wish from me, please do not hesitate to ask. I need for nothing, Yui said. And he thought, Why do I stand here torturing myself, and torturing this poor lad, though he does not know it? Oya! Damn those Harkonnen beasts! Why did they choose me for their abomination?
How do we approach the study of Muad'Dib's father? A man of surpassing warmth and surprising coldness was the Duke Leto Atreides. Yet many facts open the way to this duke. His abiding love for his Bene Gesserit lady, the dreams he held for his son, the devotion with which men served him,